If we did more preparation, people wouldn't be getting the off-the-cuff, fresh-and-fly product that they're used to receiving.
Also, if we did more preparation at this point in time, this probably wouldn't happen. Don't you think?
That's true. Well, the preparation wouldn't happen.
Yeah. And then we'd the podcast wouldn't happen. The preparation might have happened.
Yeah, we just force ourselves to meet and record something.
Yeah.
I think is the way to go.
Yeah.
To make quality products.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll get better. It'll get better. Keep listening. It'll get better.
That's our motto. Experience pointers.
Let's go.
Trust us.
Please, let's go.
We do have a new sponsor this week, though.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Tell them all about it, Jordan.
Real exciting.
We have it's a local sponsor here in Burbank, California. It's called Jake's Subs. And they actually, have you guys eaten there yet?
I haven't.
You haven't?
No, I haven't.
I had lunch there one day when I was talking to the owner about if he would please sponsor us for money. And he said, yes. And they have an interesting thing they do. You know, like Subway, you can go and you get a drink and you get chips and you get a sub and it's like your combo meal.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. This place, you get a drink, you get your sub, pair of socks. Pair of socks comes with
it. Like nice socks?
Like athletic socks, like everyday socks. It's a really great way to just expand your... Because, you know, everybody's always got, like, old socks, holes in socks. Like, people don't get new socks. That's not something you buy for yourself.
Uh-huh.
So if you're ever in Burbank, California, be sure to check out Jake's Subs. No, not socks. They actually don't have socks in the name. It's Subs. And then you don't find out the sock thing until you buy a sub there.
But are they, like, branded Jake's socks?
No, Jake's, I think they're Hanes.
Okay.
Those are quality socks.
So anyways,
I'm wearing some Hanes right now.
Welcome to Experience Pointers, brought to you by Jake Subs.
All right, guys, let's get started. We are a trio of gamers, RPG gamers, more specifically, Rapuga, if you will. And we talk about all sorts of things about RPGs, mostly from the GM's perspectives, but also the player's perspective, all sorts of perspectives.
Mm.
And
Mainly just two.
maybe a viewer's perspective. That might be relevant later on today. We'll see. Who are we? I'm Gaurav.
I'm Megan.
And I'm Jordan.
What are we talking about today, Jordan?
Well, today, it's kind of interesting because the three of us, we all stream RPGs on the Twitch channel Saving Throw, and we've been doing that for a couple of years now.
Mm-hmm.
But streaming games have been on the rise in the last couple of years, thanks to like hugely popular games like Critical Role and things like that, and probably Saving Throw as well, like Critical Role, then right below that, Saving Throw.
Hmm.
An interesting phenomenon has happened because of that, because a lot of people are getting into gaming because of those streams. So I am seeing some stuff on the web about people who have been running home games for a long time, and they feel like when they're bringing new players into the game, the streams are affecting their home games in a negative way. A lot of people are saying that the rise of streaming RPGs has had a negative or an adverse effect on home tabletop RPG games. So that's what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's jump right into it. What do people say? What does the internet say about this kind of stuff? Because I've always thought the internet was a nice place where nobody complained.
Whoa.
Now you're telling me that people are complaining about streaming RPGs? That's news to me.
Wow. You should get on to different internet websites, I think.
Read a comment section sometime.
Yeah.
Just literally any comment section about anything.
My mom told me not to.
Oh, well, that's good advice.
It is. I've seen a little bit about this, and one of the most recent places I saw it was Sly Flourish's Twitter page, and he was kind of discussing this, that a lot of people have said that, and often what he was saying, or what I've seen, is it's a GM complaining about new players. Mm-hmm. New players come in and from what the GM says, well, they're expecting Matt Mercer from Critical Role, or they're expecting somebody who is a voiceover actor or has this performance background, and well, I just don't run my game like that, and they're unhappy. That's a lot of what I see. More than anything, it's about the expectation of really probably the role play,
mm-hmm.
more than anything.
Well, not only that, there were other GMs that have chimed in saying stuff like they don't know how to motivate these players because they are not motivated by the traditional factors that RPG gamers are. Talking specifically about D&D, like they don't really care about leveling up and getting experience. They don't want to get loot. They don't care about that stuff. What they care about is roleplay and mm-hmm. storytelling and interacting with each other. And I think that's those are interesting complaints to me because I think they're very telling of different generational ideas about yeah. what role-playing games are, how they work, how they should be played. But before we get too much into what they think and whether or not we agree with them, mm-hmm. It might be interesting, since we've all been streaming RPGs for a couple years now, to see what your experience has been like and how it's been different playing in a stream game versus playing in a home game.
Well, it is different. And it's been interesting because I have been on Saving Throw for about a year and a half, I suppose. I've been streaming games. And just even my time from day one to now has grown and changed in a lot of ways. I've learned a lot and I see it differently than I did initially. And I've learned more of the differences, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But the major difference to me and something that I focus on and I think we focus on at Saving Throw is the role-playing side of it, because it is for an audience, and especially for me coming from being an actor, coming from a performance, a theater background, I approach it that way. At my home games, before I started Saving Throw, I did not role-play to this degree. Not with the character voices, not for as long, I might say, a thing or two in character, but... And some of this is just my own experience as an actor, but it just never felt like a performance space. You know, playing D&D with a group of friends, it was like, sure, I could do that, but I felt like it made people feel weird. So I didn't, and I felt uncomfortable with it.
Well, see, it's interesting that you say that, because my first experience as a player of D&D came in college, which I think I've talked about before on the stream.
Yeah.
On the stream. On this podcast.
Whoa.
Oh, my gosh.
Freudian slip.
Where am I?
Do you wish you were streaming right now?
No, I'm cool.
Okay.
But we, my friend and I, my roommate in college, we were talking in in our weather class in college that we took. It was a science. We had to take a science class, and we were in Oklahoma, and weather's a big deal there. They do meteorological
study. It is a big deal.
There.
Weather is great, you guys. If you live in California, you are missing out on weather.
If you live in California, you may not know what we mean when we say weather.
Yeah, I think people in California think they know what weather means. They don't.
I have to put on a light layer, so I get it. but that's not accurate. No. But anyways, we were in that class and we were talking about Dungeons & Dragons because neither one of us had ever played. We'd always wanted to. And then the TA happened to be walking by our table at that point, and he came back by and he was like, I'm sorry, were you guys just talking about D&D? and we were like, oh, yeah. And he was like, I run games. I'm a DM, but I don't have any players right now. Would you guys maybe want to like start up a game group? And we were like, yeah. So we got a bunch of our friends together to go and play with this guy, and we were all actors. We all came from the drama department, and this guy was a scientist. Yeah. He was a weather scientist, and he was completely unprepared for what we brought to the table. Because I think for all of us, yes, we were excited about the game and all that kind of stuff, but we came to it as like, yeah, we're gonna come up with like these really like crazy out there compelling characters. And he... It took him a long time to figure out how to deal with us, but I'll talk more about that later.
Yeah, well, yeah, well, it was sort of what you're saying, though. I feel like, and I came into playing RPGs really through you, Jordan, I don't know, maybe a year or two after you started playing with Kyle, right, mm-hmm. with the meteorologist guy. And yeah, I just didn't, I mean, it was just a different experience. It's not as... A lot of the people I played with were actors, and the GMs that I had were also actors and performers. So for the most part, especially early on, my RPG, my gaming experience was sort of roleplay focused, but not like we do it on stream. So on stream, and this is something we actually have talked about, it's, I mean, when you're watching something, you're watching the characters, you're watching mm-hmm. the story that they go through, their struggles, their successes. It's not just about the mechanics. Now, that depends. I think that there are audience members out there that want to see different things. You know, mm-hmm. some of them maybe don't care about the role playing and they want to watch the mechanical side of it. They want to learn about the game, mm-hmm. or they're like, man, I don't care what game you're playing. I want to see some interesting characters. So it, really for me, it's a heightened difference.
Mm-hmm.
And even now, whenever we play home games, it's just, you can spend, I think you've talked about this, some Gaurav, for like, I think last episode about Iron Keep, about having a cipher that it's like, okay, well, we're sitting here
right.
and we're taking too long. That is something, things have to be a bit quicker on yeah. stream. You can't spend a lot of time focused on something that isn't yeah. active for the viewer.
Well,
depending upon how you do it.
Sure.
I'm not trying to cut that
right.
out entirely.
And I think that's, you can't, so you can spend a lot of time focused on something that's not active for the viewer, but in your mind, while you're playing, like when you're playing at a home game, you're just going to work on that mm-hmm. cipher.
Right.
You're just going to try and figure it out. But when you're on stream, you're like, okay, how can we figure out this cipher, but also be compelling and interesting to watch at the same time? You always right. are asking yourself that question, yeah. like, how can I make sure that I'm bringing the audience into what we're doing so they're not just staring at us, mm-hmm. staring at a piece of paper silently?
Right. It's got to be inclusive with yeah. the people who are viewing you, and not just, it's not just the 4, 5, 6, 7 of you, whatever, at the table. You, yeah. you right. have a whole nother aspect. I mean, that's the performance side. You're always right. conscious of the camera, the audience, whoever it is.
Right.
You got to be conscious of that, and that's a part
and
of it.
And unless your home game setup is very different from, you know, the traditional home game setup, you probably aren't worried about what an audience is thinking of you when you're playing in your home game.
Mm-hmm. In my home games, when I'm the DM, I'm always worried what my players are thinking. Mm-hmm. I consider them the audience
sure.
at that point.
Yeah.
Sure. Because, well, so running a game at home and running a game for a stream, I consider them two totally different games in my head.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like, yes, you're playing the same game most of the time, but a lot of times you need to think ahead when you're doing a stream game. You need to think a little farther ahead than you usually do, because you don't have as much time to react to things. You don't want any dead silence. You're essentially making a TV show, a live TV show that's
right.
3 hours long.
And improv.
For an audience. And improv, yeah,
yeah,
for the most part.
Right.
And, like, you can't have that, like, you have a hard decision to make. At a home game, I'd give players, like, you guys talk about it for maybe 5 minutes. Maybe mm-hmm. longer. If you guys need time, I have nothing but time. Do it. Mm-hmm. But for a TV show, like, you wouldn't want to watch them do that. Unless it was, like, very compelling argument.
I don't know. There's several episodes of The Walking Dead that are just about them
oh,
making one decision.
Boy. But the point is, when a
and
performer...
And I say that very in a complimentary way. I love that stuff.
When a performer is doing that and it's a performance, it can be interesting because
sure.
you're watching the character drama.
Right.
Right.
But if it's just people like, I don't know, what should we do? Just yeah. discussing it, that's not necessarily engaging for somebody to view.
Yeah.
It's a heightening factor.
Yeah, players at the table need to, for a stream game, they need to continue moving it forward, because if you spend 3 hours in one location doing and getting almost nowhere because you were doing so much role play, like, it's not going to feel that great for people watching, unless that role play was through the roof amazing the entire goddamn time.
Uh-huh.
Like, you want to make it a TV show that has usually a beginning, middle, and end.
Right.
And, like, sometimes you won't have combat, but the times that you do, it really needs to matter. Like, we've talked about making combat matter for home games. Like, it counts doubly so for those stream games. Like, it really
yeah.
needs to matter
but
for
see,
those games.
You know, what's interesting to me hearing you guys talk about this stuff is I feel like all of these things, if you brought that kind of sensibility into a home game,
mm-hmm.
it would heighten your home
sure,
games.
This...
I mean, if you're focused on going, like, rather than, like, let's hash all the details out of this plan, like, let's just put a plan into action and, like, make it go. Like,
I agree with that. I honestly, I prefer stream games. I think some of that, and I mentioned this before, is because I'm a performer and it taps into that for me. And it is like this permission to be something else, to be more than I feel like I can at home. And I enjoy that. I thrive on that to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But I also agree this is something that we've actually talked about before, but it's sort of an editing thing. Because not only, I mean, I'm sure that for home games, and I know this has been our experience, that it's like, well, we've got 4 hours. We got to end at this time. People have to go to work tomorrow. But the fact that we have, okay, this is our start time, this is our end time, and yeah, sometimes we go long, but we have to have the beginning, middle, and end, and it makes you think different. And yeah, and whenever you're like, we have to keep the action moving, driving, it raises the stakes. It's more interesting. It keeps the players engaged. And I do actually think there's a lot of value in that, even at home. And often the games I've played that I don't enjoy are games that don't do that, are games in which we're like, you know, in the middle of something and then someone's like, oh, let me show you this video, or let's talk
yeah.
about this thing
mm-hmm.
forever. And honestly,
did you guys see these 16 different cat videos that I saw today? Hold on, we have time.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's there's sort of discipline's not quite the right word, but just a structure. If you kind of go, now we've begun and let's all focus on that, it really changes the way it feels. It feels a little strange, I think, to do that at home, but I actually think it makes a big difference. And streaming literally is that structure for us.
Right. Yeah.
And I think it's interesting, Gaurav, you were saying when you're running a game for stream versus at home, you think of it as like two completely different things.
Mm-hmm.
As a contrast to that, I run games on stream very much like I run games at home.
Mm-hmm.
The difference in for my end of it is how I approach the preparation for it. So like I will prepare things to be like to try and have more of a definitive, like you were saying, beginning, middle, end structure.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that I run them on stream is pretty much exactly the way I run them at home. Like mm-hmm. there's no difference in like performance commitment or anything like that for me when I'm doing stuff on stream, but that's because I've always enjoyed bringing that sort of performance aspect into my games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can attest to that. Yeah. That is definitely true. And I personally prefer that style of gaming, and I have found playing with other games before that I'm like, oh, this one's much more mechanical, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it's not what I like. Which has been interesting to learn about myself, of what I like in role-playing mm-hmm. games.
But I think that's an interesting point that kind of goes along in this argument. We like performance aspects like that. I don't know, Gaurav, like, do you enjoy the performance aspect of streaming games in the same way that Megan and I do?
Yeah, I very much do, although I do like mechanics as well, but they need to serve the game.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They need to make sense and not, like, overwhelm yeah. everything else.
Yeah.
But I enjoy them both equally, but I think the role-playing comes first for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I don't personally like really high-crunch games, is because mm-hmm. I don't like when mechanics get in the way of my storytelling. I like when mechanics serve my storytelling, but I hate when I feel like I have to stop things and, like, figure out and make sure I'm doing it the right way and all that kind of stuff in those high-crunch systems.
Well, and I think this is what you were getting ready to touch on, though, is that, and you've mentioned this, Jordan, so don't let me steal it from you, but basically you think now people in general have different things they like about a role-playing game. They either want the mechanics, they don't care about role-playing, they only want role-playing, they don't care about the mechanics, they mm-hmm. like a little bit of both, they like battle, they don't like battle, whatever, various different things. And now there's something to point at.
Yes.
Right, which is what you said. So
right.
And
so,
from, well, I'll let you, since it's sort of your point.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, I started playing in college, which was the early 2000s. And that was before, there were no, like, stream games or anything like that at that point. But I already wanted that role-playing heavy kind of focus on things. Now, having said that, I was motivated by XP and leveling up. I also like mechanics, which I think is one of the reasons that made me want to be a GM, is I like story, but I also like mechanics. But that, like, I already had that want. So did all of my friends. But it's not what everybody wants. Like I said, the guy that was mm-hmm. GMing for us was a purely mechanics focus. Like, he was a math and science approach to D&D. It was all about, like, min-maxing your characters, which he taught us how to do. And that was what was kind of interesting as we were playing. Like, he loved the numbers and, like, making sure your characters were optimal with, like, feat progression and all that kind of stuff. And we loved the roleplay aspect of it, but we kind of learned from each other. Like, his idea of an optimal magic item, like, if we were trying to find a magic sword,
mm-hmm.
He was like, in order to entice us, he'd be like, this sword is a magic +3 sword that's also enchanted with acid, holy, radiant, ice, and fire damage.
Okay.
Like, that, it was all about, like, covering your damage type spread. And I was like, okay, cool. I don't care about that at all. Like, my whole thing was like, I always wanted the weird magic items that don't have any apparent use. And, like, how can I make that a thing?
Yeah.
But over time, as we were playing, like, we learned to get more into, like, the speccing of our characters. And he actually started to kind of come towards us and open up a bit on the characterization aspect of it. It was really cool. But it's not everybody's style. I've played with other DMs and GMs who are not into the roleplay aspect, and it kind of weirds them out, and it's not really what they want to focus on, and that's totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you play the game the way you want to play it.
Right.
But yeah, I think this issue has already existed, like you were saying, Megan, but now people are like, okay, I didn't like what we were playing before, and I wasn't sure why, but now I know it's because it's not like that. It's not like what's happening on Critical Role, and that's what I want.
Yeah.
But do you think that there would be less people? I mean, if they're like, oh, Critical Role or, you know, any other stream, oh, well, that's D&D. Well, then that's what I want. Do you think that there are more people that are pointing at that because of it? Just because it's out in the world, they can see it in a way that they couldn't before.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's visible, people are going like, oh, that's D&D. But like, to me, I don't see any difference in coming into a game like D&D from watching Critical Role or from finding the book on the shelf in your gaming store and picking it up and wanting to learn how to play. Both are just avenues to get you into the game. Sure. It just kind of sets your expectations in a different way.
But what's more likely to happen in 2017? You walking into a bookstore or you looking on the internet?
Independent bookstores are actually doing really well right now. Big box bookstores like Barnes & Noble and stuff like that, those are dying. But how independent stores?
Sure.
Crazy good.
Sure.
I'm just saying.
I'm just saying that social media has so much reach now that, I mean, Critical Role has probably brought thousands of people into D&D. Like, if not
easily.
More.
Easily.
Yeah. But like...
Tens. Tens of people.
Yeah. Tens of people.
At least dozens. And so that's something to be grateful for. I mean, any way you look at it, like bringing people into this amazing hobby that we all love and will continue to love. Like, it's amazing to have more people watching and playing the game with us.
But there's a weird, that's a double-edged sword in geek culture specifically.
Sure.
And we've probably all noticed this in various different aspects. You know, you have like the advent of all of these superhero movies, and now there's all these new comic fans that old guard comic fans are like, well, they're not real fans.
Sure.
They don't understand the characters and the stories in the same way. And I feel like there's a little bit of that movement, that push back in the RPG community. There's these people that are like, oh, well, they only watch Critical Role in like live stream games. They're not real RPG fans. They don't understand it and love it and like, you know, grew with it like I did.
And I can understand that feeling. I mean, I can't, you know, I think I've definitely experienced it with like books that I read and I'm like, this book was great and I really enjoyed it. No one knows about it. And then people start knowing about it and you're like, yay, but also screw you, my book.
Right. Yeah, it's that counterintuitive human thing where it's
right.
like, more people have to know about it and come to it in order for it to succeed and grow and get better for you. But you have this weird possessive kind of like, I'm the only one that knows the right way to love this thing.
Right. And I have felt that. I feel like some of the older folks that I know who have played D&D for a long time, there is a difference in approach to the game, or at least that's how it's felt to me. Not entirely, but I can see that. There's just a different, they look at the game, they play it differently, which makes sense. They play different editions, essentially.
They
played a different game.
Older editions of D&D are literally just a different game than modern D&D.
They really are. So I can understand it, but it is... Especially when something explodes kind of all at once and like there's just this flood of new people, it can feel a little weird if it's something that you were used to before, and especially if you were persecuted for it.
Oh, yeah.
That can hurt, you know? And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, now it's cool?
Yeah.
Now?
And that's what kind of that causes this sort of like calcification around your game group. You're like, all right, well, we're the persecuted outsiders, but that's our identity. Like, we're going to own that. And then when all these new people are coming in, like, even people that might remind you of some of the people that maybe, like, ostracized you before.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what happens when things go mainstream. Mainstream people get into it. And you're
right.
like, well, they're not real. It's interesting.
Yeah, it is. But I do think... I don't think that streaming has hurt role-playing games. Not really. I think it's a new avenue. I think it's just different.
Yeah.
I think it's just different face of the same thing. And there's still room for people to play the way they want to with the people they want. And honestly, now there's probably more people that they can play with. So if a new player comes in, they don't like your GM style, they can find another group or vice versa. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a person could watch Critical Role and be like, I don't really like this weird acting stuff they're doing, but I really like how that game looks. That looks a lot of fun. And they could find a group that likes that kind of game, too.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, there's the game streaming arena has been, like, booming as well. There's so many different streams. Like, if you are watching Critical Role and you're like, I don't know, this is too roleplay heavy, I'm not really enjoying this, I want to learn more about the game, there are any number of other streams you could go and watch because someone is streaming a super mechanics-focused game for sure out there.
Yeah.
But Grav, I'm interested to hear, since you were not as aware of this issue, do you think having talked about this, do you think that streaming is negatively impacting home games, potentially?
I don't think it's negatively impacting. I think it's definitely impacting it, but I don't know about overall negatively impacting it, honestly. Like, there's no way that having D&D become more popular, or RPGs in general become more popular, is going to be negative, I don't think, to the hobby in a long-term sense. It's only going to make it more popular and have people tell other people, tell their friends, tell their family, tell their kids about it, you know? Like,
sure.
I'm sure some of us grew up and our parents played it and we were like, this is weird. And then we grew up and watch it on Twitch one day and we're like, whoa, this is really cool. Mm-hmm. And you could connect with your family in a different way, you know?
Now, I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second.
Uh-oh.
But isn't the whole reason, like, the argument behind someone selling out is that when you kind of start trying to appeal more to pop culture and to the mainstream, you water down your identity and what you actually are. So could you see from some people's perspective that D&D getting all of this popularity and all of this more mainstream and wide appeal might start to change the game in an unfavorable way that starts to feel more like, oh, how can we make it more approachable for everybody? Sort of like what the Wii did for game consoles. Yeah. And like,
well, yes, but my big thing about role-playing games is that you can do it however you want. I mean, you can go home and you can use the rules you want from D&D or any other game, or not. You can follow it exactly and make sure you're following every single rule, or follow like two rules. You do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. So yes, I can see that and how it is that way. And I guess if Wizards of the Coast was like, okay, it's real popular for these people, so we're going to change the game entirely and make it for them. But then there are still the old editions. I don't know. Yeah. I can see.
And they already kind of did that with 4th edition.
Like, I suppose that's
4th
true.
Edition was in many ways a direct appeal to the MMO, like World of Warcraft players, to try and get them to jump ship into something that was more recognizable to them.
But that's just change. That has mm-hmm. nothing to do with streaming. That's just change. Yeah. Streaming's just a part of it.
Yeah. I intensely disagree with my own argument that I just presented there. I think that streaming in no way negatively impacts tabletop games. I agree with you guys. It can only help the hobby. But I think the issue here is the people that are seeing it as problematic are thinking about things in too, like, binary a way. Mm-hmm. They're like, I play the game like this, but they want it like Critical Role, and I don't do that, yeah. So I can't give them what they want, which is totally a cop-out. If you are a GM and you have a new player who comes to you and their expectations were set by Critical Role, A, you shouldn't be intimidated. I totally understand why you would be, mm-hmm. but you shouldn't yep. be. That's that really, when you sit down and think about it, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It's a gut feeling more than it is like a rational thing. Mm-hmm. And then B, there are so many things you can do to bring them into your game, but also allow yourself to be brought a bit more into the world of the game that they want to play as well. And I think when I see GMs saying online that they feel like streaming is changing things, I read from a lot of them a reluctance to change the way that they run the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 And isn't that really what it's about, though? I mean, I can understand people wanting to GM because it's like, well, I like to do things this way, and this is how I want my game to run, and that's fine. But in my experience, you're GMing for your friends. You're mm-hmm. for the players. Mm-hmm. You want, and I feel like we just talked about this maybe last episode, but you want to create things for the different people at your table, because you might have someone who likes mechanics, who likes role-playing, who likes whatever, and you want to be giving things to those players, right? So if you have a new player who seemingly likes role-playing, why not give them a little? Just like you were saying with your meteorologist, you know, DM, who eventually did do that.
He did. Well, yeah, and I feel like, so a lot of people, like you said, Megan, early on, they're like, well, I'm not a voice actor like Matt Mercer. They want, like, all of these NPCs who are, like, totally different, but I can't do, you know, 50 different voices like Matt Mercer can. But there are ways to clearly denote different NPCs that aren't vocal. You know, yeah. Like Garav talked about using musical cues to denote different NPCs in his games. That's an interesting way. If you feel like that's a weakness of yours, you don't make your NPCs look different, I would challenge you to do this. The next time you want to introduce a different NPC, change your posture. That's it. Like, when you're talking as that NPC, like, say the town's going to meet some like crime lord or some big bad evil guy or whatever, sit back in your chair, put your feet up, and twiddle your thumbs while you talk to them.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you something will change in your characters' minds about how they perceive that character, And that's all you have to do. Literally yeah. just adapt some small physical mannerism mm-hmm. and you can immediately tag those NPCs without having to change your voice at all.
It's really true. I mean, that honestly, that not only can it do that, and you really don't have to do much more, you don't have to do anything more than that, but you'll be surprised how much it informs you. That's yeah. that's an acting thing. I mean, that's a straight up acting technique right out of college
yeah.
that I remember learning. It was like, yeah, you make that you want to cry, you make your face do all the things it does when you cry, and you'll cry. Like it's but obviously we're not going that far, but just something so
we
simple.
Want you to cry at the table.
Cry at the table.
Boo it out.
We just something that simple makes such a huge difference.
Now for the other angle, the onus is also on the new players here too to understand
yes.
that not everything is Critical Role.
Right. Like
you,
yeah.
You have to realize, yeah, yeah, those guys are they're trained professional performers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't put that on your game group. It's okay to have high expectations for your game, but understand that not everybody is that caliber of performer. So what do you guys think new players can do to help with that as well? Like what sort of mindset or what can they actively try and do at the table to manage those expectations a bit?
Well, I mean, I think it's just about being open-minded, really. I mean, some of it is about...
Like, you didn't used to like the mechanical parts of the game at all, Megan. Like, you wanted to play, but you didn't want to necessarily, like, read and understand the way, like, your stuff worked. You wanted someone to tell you, you know, what an option was, and then for you to roll and, like, try
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, I'm still like that, because I hate reading rules.
But, through the course of Wild Cards, I feel like you have become, like, you'll, when you advance, you'll read through the spells and try and figure out, like, oh, what spell would work? Like, you'll actually do that kind of stuff.
That's because
now.
I feel committed in a different way, because it's pulling the performance side for me. I mean, that's one of the biggest things. I've liked RPGs, but whenever I to say given permission is not like somebody literally gave me permission, but for me, that's how it feels. Somebody gave me permission to be able to apply my performance background in a way that is just completely is inspiring to me and is moving to me. And that made me more interested in the other aspects.
But would you say, yeah, since you've been able to find the way that you have fun in the game,
mm-hmm.
That over time you have grown to appreciate the mechanical side of things in a different way as well?
Yeah, I think so. I've done that less with Dungeons & Dragons and more with Savage Worlds. It's a little harder to say because I mostly started with Savage Worlds on stream, not entirely.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And Savage Worlds is a little less complicated in my mind than Dungeons & Dragons.
In some ways.
Even now with Ironkeep, I get overwhelmed because it's just like, there's just so much. And I do like rules because I am a firm believer if you have a box, if you have limits, you can be more creative. And that's actually mm-hmm. what I liked. I always liked yeah. playing rogues because I couldn't go and just like, you know, like beat everybody up with my giant sword. I had to get creative and it forced me to be creative with what I had. And so I do like that. And you have to have a certain amount of rules to do that. Like I hate games like Fiasco because there are not enough rules and it leaves me frozen. So I do like that aspect of it. But for me personally, trying to learn all the mechanics is like, can still keep me from
sure.
game sometimes.
But I think what I'm driving at is like both for GMs and players, be open to what the other side is interested in.
Yeah.
Show them how you want to play the game, but then also see how they want to play the game and try and find ways to move a little bit closer to them and draw them a little bit closer to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, at the end, I mean, I assume you're all friends. I know some game groups start with just like, hey, we're looking for a game group,
yeah.
you know, join me. But approach it, you know, it's a group of people coming to play together. It's not all about you. It's not all about them. It's about everybody. So that means there's compromise and give and take.
And it also may not work. Sometimes
sometimes
the alchemy of a particular game group just doesn't work. And there's no shame in being like, you know what? We clearly want different things entirely. And we're not really on the same page about this. And
right.
that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, I think I'm going to try and find a different group to play with. Thanks very much. But like, this isn't working out.
Right. So in conclusion, I think we're all on the same page here and
mm-hmm.
agree that streaming RPGs is probably not changing. Well, it is changing, but it's
definitely
not negative.
Changing.
Not negatively. But I will say with the caveat that us three are, we're all streamers
right.
here. So we're probably a little bit biased, you know?
But
maybe just a little.
I was running games for a long time before I ran them on stream.
But sure, but I'm just putting it out there.
Sure.
I'm just putting it out there. We are all three of us are streamers, so. Mm-hmm.
So, scientifically.
Scientifically.
We are biased.
Exactly. Just putting it out
but
there.
But we're also totally correct.
We're totally correct.
We are not wrong. We are not wrong.
Okay. Well, I think that brings us to the question of the
We really can't do like an echo effect or something? Do we? Are you sure we have to manually echo in every time?
Jordan, afford that. Are you kidding
me? I'm just checking.
That was the echo effect. How is Jake Subs paying us for that echo effect?
We haven't. Yeah, their check hasn't cleared yet, so.
Okay. Well, can we at least get some socks?
Well, I mean, yeah, you just got to order at least a 6-inch sub and a drink.
It comes wrapped in a sock.
Oh, boy. Okay. So, this question today comes from the Repugga, or as some of you may call it, RPG Reddit.
Oh yeah, I forgot people say it like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm weird. Okay, so here's a question. What are creative and interesting character handicaps? So there's a little blurb I'll read to you about what this guy is actually asking. As a GM, I'm always open for creative character ideas from players, even if the creation of the character needs, in a certain scope, small rule deviations. But if I agree to something like this special item the character needs because of his story, the character must have deductions somewhere to hold the balance. Easiest way is to reduce basic attributes or obvious handicaps like blindness or just one arm. But do you have more creative ideas which are really interesting for the roleplay aspect?
Hmm.
So that's a question. And I mean, I think that I know one thing that Jordan would say about
what would he say? What would he say? Let's find out what he's going to say.
No, I want to hear what you guys think I'm going to say.
Oh, well, I just thought that you might bring up, there's like this one system. What is it? It's a system. Do you know what I'm
Was it Dungeons and Dragons?
I don't think that.
No, it probably wasn't Dungeons and Dragons.
Guys, I'm not going to take this bait because I have something entirely different to talk about.
Okay.
Well, now I really want to hear it.
Right? Okay, fine. Well,
but I will say that all that stuff is baked into Savage Worlds.
There it is. Yeah. I do actually. That was one thing. Savage Worlds and then Dungeon World or Apocalypse World has
bonds.
They have the bonds. Mm.
Which could read as a drawback, but it could also be a different. Positive thing.
But Savage Worlds literally has hindrances built into the game
and those are designed to encourage people who maybe aren't as comfortable with roleplay to think about their characters in a different way.
So I think and some of those hindrances have like mechanical effects, but a lot of them don't. Like Rosaline, my character on Wildcards, she's curious, and it doesn't. I mean, she's just curious. That's her major hindrance. Which, to be fair, I don't always play awesomely, she also has greedy and she has loyal. And actually, none of mine have any mechanical aspects to them.
Oh, wow.
That's true. Yeah, none of them do. Your hindrances are all roleplay focused.
Yeah. So
Grav's hindrances, though, a couple of them are mechanical. Your claustrophobia.
That's mechanical.
Is mechanical.
Code of Honor isn't, and then Doubting... So just one. But mostly roleplay, yeah.
I think Doubting Thomas does have a mechanical element as well. When you are confronted with incontrovertible proof of the supernatural, I think it opposes a penalty to your fear checks.
Yeah, I feel true. Mm-hmm. But I feel like in any system, you could take that idea of hindrances. I mean...
And a lot of people do. Yeah.
And I love it. I mean, when I saw that, that was one thing that really endeared Savage Worlds to me, was that aspect. That and even the edges, which I know are sort of like feats in D&D, but I just think that's super cool.
Yeah.
Having a flaw is so much more interesting
than
just being good at everything.
It's way more, it makes the characters real to me.
Yeah.
I think have a good flaw.
And that's interesting too. A lot of people say that. A lot of people, especially, we'll go back to the geek community thing. A lot of people are like, oh, Superman's boring because he's just good at everything. But then when it comes time to sit down and create your character at the game, you want to create Superman. Yeah. You're like, I can do this and also I can do that. And I have a helicopter, but I can breathe underwater. And like, you know.
Well, it's when it comes to the actual gameplay, and I can attest to this as Rosaline even, but other characters... It's hard. You don't want them to screw up. You want them to succeed. You want to win because, I mean, I can't say this is for everyone, but in a lot of ways, it is a power fantasy. You're playing this character. You're like, I'm Rosaline. I'm going to go and do these cool things that Megan maybe can't do as well, or I think I can't, or whatever, you know? It's hard.
I'm going to toot my own horn here just for a little bit.
There it is.
Because my second ever D&D character that I made, not my first one, but my second D&D character, I built him to have a whole lot of... like weird drawbacks. So my first character was a paladin, and like I played him as like, you know, just a real like stereotypical like good guy, law-abiding paladin. Then he died defending the party, and I got to create a new character, and I created a chaotic neutral changeling bard. And I decided, just independently, not in a mechanical way, that my bard would only be able to use his bluff and persuasion skills when he had a glamour up, so he was looking like something else or someone else. When it was just his normal face, he wasn't able to do that because he wasn't playing a character and he couldn't lie or be charismatic in any way. Mm-hmm. I also made him, because my paladin was the party leader and I was getting frustrated having to make decisions all the time, I made sure that my bard would not be looked to at the party leader, because every decision that he made by random chance. So if we were in a room and there were like four doors to take, I would roll a d4 and I'd be like, that one. And everyone would be like, wait, no. Wait, how are you choosing that? But I wouldn't. I kind of gave him a little bit of like a two-faced thing. Like he would always use some sort of element of chance before making any important decisions. And his goal was to find a deck of many things. Like that was like his goal was to find one of those.
That's such a fun item too.
And all of those things, like, I put in there because I thought I had played the paladin, I played my Superman character, and I played it out, and I was like, I've done that. Now let me play with someone who has weird reactions in different situations. Mm-hmm. Like, he was really good at persuading people unless they knew he was a changeling, and if they could see his true face, he would just totally shut down. And I would do, like, different character voices for each one of these personas that he had, but then I would just be, like, gray and neutral if I didn't have my glamours up. And it was really, really cool.
Yeah.
And I loved that character.
Yeah. So, I mean, D&D 5th edition doesn't have any built-in mechanics for the flaws you take.
It's backgrounds.
So backgrounds, you do get a literal flaw or two. You can take a couple if you want to.
Yeah, and I did like that aspect because I think that can really help with people who aren't used to that.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't have any mechanical aspect to it. That doesn't mean you can't get a mechanical aspect. That's something you can kind of, like, when you're making a character, sit down with your DM and kind of negotiate with him. Like, so if I want my character to start with one eye, like, I will take that every perception check I roll will be a disadvantage. Like, sure, that's a given. But what do I get in because of that? And that's a pretty small thing. Maybe they'll be like, well, I don't think you should get anything, but that's a very cool thing. So when you do perception checks, I'm going to give you, when you do use that one eye to its full extent, I will give you inspiration most of the time, because you're using a flaw of yours to its full advantage, narratively and mechanically.
I'm going to throw something pretty extreme out there.
Uh-oh.
Mm. Maybe think about taking mechanical disadvantages with no offset for it.
Yeah.
Think about playing a one-eyed person who has a disadvantage on every perception check,
mm-hmm.
and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, that's just your thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That can be... I understand, and the original poster also said, you know, he was kind of talking about these drawbacks as a trade-off. Like, you have something good, so you have to have a drawback. But think about just having drawbacks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot of fun to be mined out of that. Even if you're a min-maxer, you've maybe never tried it because it scares you and you don't want to do it because that makes your character suboptimal, but give it a shot. Do it for a one-shot. Play a one-shot character that has, like, a major drawback or two or three, and just see what you can do with it. See if you enjoy it at all. You might be surprised.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a really cool idea. So I think that answers that question, guys. I think we did it. Another episode in the tube there.
Tube. That's what we say.
That's what
Look at that.
So hopefully they've finished their fine steak dinner at this point.
Yeah, I hope so. And if not, finish up. It's been 45 minutes. Maybe
don't order
maybe
well done.
Or
I mean, that's the problem.
If you haven't been eating a fine steak dinner and you're hungry now and you live in the Burbank area, check out Jake's Subs.
Yeah.
That's right. Jake's Subs.
Get your socks. That's what that's their motto, isn't it?
Get your socks on.
Oh, I missed the
get your
part.
Socks on.
Get your socks on.
Mm-hmm.
They get the Let's Good seal of approval this
Where
week.
Where are they located?
In Burbank.
Where in Burbank?
Do you want to be more specific about that address?
Oh, yeah. They're on the corner of Olive and Magnolia.
Those streets don't cross. Okay. That's
not where you're thinking of.
Oh, okay. Cool.
If you follow them far enough.
They curve. When you hit
Magnolia
towards
curves.
The mountains.
Do they?
Mm-hmm.
Do they?
Yeah.
Into a hellscape pit? It goes into the ground? Hmm? Is that where they curve?
Yeah, where Jake Subs is.
Oh, okay, that's the hellscape.
Get your socks on!
Get your socks
on! Get your
on.
Socks on!
Money, please.
This podcast has been a Saving Throw production. You can connect with us on Twitter at @exppointerspod, and you can follow each of the hosts on Twitter at their respective handles. Jordan is @JordanKellerman, Megan is @MeganCaves, and Grav is at DoubleGXG. You can also watch us streaming RPGs and more at the Saving Throw Twitch channel, twitch.tv/savingthrowshow. If you want to listen to new episodes of this podcast early, consider becoming a Saving Throw Patreon backer. Patrons at the $10 and up level can listen to new episodes a week early. You can also help us out by rating, reviewing, and subscribing to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you found it to get the word out. Thanks for listening!